Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
A bill proposing significant changes to the laws around consent and on the use of character references in court has been approved by government. The Sexual Offences and Human Trafficking Bill will mean honest belief that a victim had given consent will no longer be a defence in rape cases. It also includes a variety of other measures, which we're going to discuss with the Minister for Justice, Helen McEntee, who's here. Good morning, Minister.
Good morning,
Claire. Thanks for coming in. Before we come to all of that, we've been discussing this already on the programme, the RTE controversy and Ryan Tuberty's evidence yesterday. We've two committees now looking at this, hearing evidence piece by piece. We've had over 20 hours now of evidence at those committees. Do you think that this is really the best way of figuring out what happened?
Well, I think there are a number of strands to this, and I think it is important where you have a publicly funded body and organisation that it's held accountable by the structures that are there, be it through the Public Appointments Committee or the Media Committee. So you have public representatives who are raising very valuable and genuine concerns, as have been raised by their constituents, but also it's important that we have all of the facts laid out and that it's laid out in public. As I've said, this is a publicly funded body. Separate to that, then, you have a process whereby the Minister herself, Catherine Martin, has sought external reviews, has sought forensic reviews looking at the accounts, again, to make sure that all of the facts are there, that they're clear. And then we have now a new Director General who obviously is coming into the organisation only this week and needs to be given the time to take all of this information as it's gathered and put together to make sure that we, from now on, I think, start rebuilding trust in a very, very important organisation, making sure the structures are there, that it's transparent and that people have confidence in our public service broadcaster.
As we come to the end of this week, though, and we have tomorrow's hearing, then we have the appointment of this forensic accountant. So we start to move into process then. Do you think at that point, at the end of this week, that perhaps the committees then should stand back and let those three reviews go ahead?
So I'll be very honest, I haven't heard any of the committees. I haven't been in a position to be able to listen to the committees. But I do know that there are perhaps pieces of information that have to come back to the committee. I do know the committee has to do up, or both committees have to present their own reports. Mm-hmm. So yes, absolutely, at a certain point, we need to move on to the next stage to allow the committees to produce their reports, to then allow all of that information that I've said from the external review, the forensic review, the committees, that then to be presented to the minister, but also for the new director general to be able to make his decisions working with the new team that he wants to put in place. So I can't tell you how long the committees will continue, but I do think there needs to be a line drawn at some point, and that obviously the information that has been presented, that it's put together, that it's laid before these committees and put in public so everybody can see what's happened.
And I accept you're busy and you haven't been keeping a close eye on the committees, and that's understandable, but I'm sure you'll have a general view on what's happened and what you've heard about all of this. And do you have a view on whether Ryan Tuberty should be back on RTÉ Radio 1?
Of course, I've read, and while I haven't been able to see it in real time, I've read what has happened. Personally, I don't think it's for me to decide or to dictate who should or should not be on air. I think that's a matter for the Director General and the team at RTE. And I know that he is obviously going to be taking into account all of the situations that have arisen, all of the information that he has, and then that decision be made. So I really don't think it's appropriate for me as a government minister to dictate who should or should not be on air.
All right. Some politicians have made their views known, but I accept what you're saying. Now, in the past few minutes, we've had news from the Bar Council of Ireland, which say they've recommended the withdrawal of services in pursuit of improvements to barristers' pay. Now, that's a long-running dispute, we know, but this is clearly an escalation, withdrawal of criminal barrister services. What do you say to that?
So as recently as last week, I met with members of the Bar Council. I have spoken to their president or chairperson on this matter, and what I've made clear is that I do believe there should be a restoration of pay. This goes back many, many years where there were cuts right across the board to public servants, and there are only a few categories of people where that restoration has not taken place. We're not talking about astronomical fees here. We're not talking about going above and beyond. This is a restoration of pay, remuneration for work. I have discussed this with the Minister for Public Expenditure and Reform.
Why didn't they accept your reassurances on that?
Look, I think it's gotten to a situation where obviously they want to see action. What I can't do is preempt what's going to happen in the budget discussions this year. But what I have said very clearly to them is that this is something that is under discussion, that I have already engaged with the Minister for Public Expenditure and Reform, and that I want to see changes happen. Mm-hmm. So I have given that commitment. I fully appreciate the situation they find themselves in, but I can't preempt, nor can I announce what hasn't already been fully decided.
To them last week, and you said you were going to speak to the Minister for Public Expenditure. Did you have that conversation with him?
So what I relayed last week is I have already spoken to the Minister for Public Expenditure, so I'm not going to get into that discussion, as I've said, because it does relate to the wider budget.
I'm trying to figure out, obviously hasn't been decided. What did they
yet.
Hear from you last week that prompted this today, a withdrawal of services, unprecedented?
I think this was a decision that had already been taken, and I appreciate that they're following through, and I appreciate it is a difficult situation for many in that profession. As I've said, we're not talking about astronomical prices here. We're not talking about going above and beyond. This is remuneration for work that is being done. Every person has a right to be to have representation in a criminal trial, and obviously it is my role as minister to make sure that that representation is there. So I have given a very clear commitment that I will address this.
Have you told Pascal Donoghue, did you tell him last week when they gave an indication that they were going to withdraw their services for one day that it was going to happen?
Government is aware, and that would include Minister Donoghue, that this is the case. But again, outside of the budget discussion, it's not something that I can, you know, announce or that I can get into detail on, but it is absolutely, and I would reassure any of them that are listening, this is absolutely a priority.
Okay, so the 3rd of October is when they plan to withdraw their services. Are you asking them not to?
I will be engaging with them further between now and then. But again, I would be restating my commitment without preempting what the overall budget would be.
OK, let's move on to consent and the changes that you're introducing there, because the Law Reform Commission recommended the change on consent back in 2019. When do you expect this will be in effect?
So really, as you've just said, this is not just a recommendation from the Law Reform Commission. This is part of a wider suite of actions in the Zero Tolerance Strategy that I intend on delivering, and I intend on delivering by the end of this year. So we've published this bill. It is wide ranging. It focuses on the issue of consent, but a number of other matters as well to protect victims in rape and sexual assault cases. It is currently the case now where a person who is accused of rape can say that they honestly believed at that moment in time, whether it was the case or not, whether it was intentional or not, that they believed that consent was given, without looking at what the other person might have done or said, without looking at any of the circumstances. What we are now saying is it must be an objective test. So to me, you or any other member of a jury looking at this, is it reasonable to say that consent was given? So if you have a situation where somebody was asleep, can you reasonably say, even if that person says, I genuinely believed at the time that consent was given, if you hear evidence from the person who is making the accusation, who says, well, at the time I said no, I said, please stop. My physical actions showed that I clearly didn't want this to happen. At the moment, that's not taken into consideration when this defence is used. So it is important that both sides are listened to. It is important that all circumstances are taken into account. And that is why we are making these changes. Mm-hmm. It's not the case that this is a defence used in every single rape case. It's not. But it is certainly used and has certainly been used in recent times.
It's very tricky, though, because if somebody is willing to lie about their honest belief, then it follows that they would be willing to lie about reasonable belief too.
Absolutely. And this is not going to change the fact that this is always going to be a very difficult situation. If you have a jury who only have the voices of the accused and the person who is accusing them, with potentially no other person involved in a scenario, they have to make a decision based on the evidence from both sides as to what they believe beyond reasonable doubt happened. And it's always going to be a very difficult situation. But the idea that there could be a defence which removes what would be the circumstances leading up to that particular instance, I don't believe that's the correct thing, or that I don't believe that's the correct bar that should be set. The Law Reform Commission recommended that, and many of the advocacy groups that I would have engaged with and that have spoken about this for many years. It has already changed in the UK. It's in place about 20 years. So we're not moving away from what is the norm, particularly in common law jurisdictions.
I want to talk to you about character references, and people will know when somebody is convicted of a crime, they're about to be sentenced, and they may ask people to come in and give them a character reference in the court. You're changing the rules around those. Why and what are you doing?
So again, just to explain what currently is the situation. So a person may be called upon during a case or a trial, and they would then be able to be cross-examined if they give evidence relating to an individual, their view on that person. However, when it comes to sentencing, so this is where a person has already been found guilty, it is open to a friend, a member of the community, to put forward in writing a character reference, you know, testifying to their belief of this person's character. They cannot be cross-examined because this is not an affidavit. This is just a piece of paper that's presented to the judge when the sentencing is happening. What we are saying now is that this would have to be provided via an affidavit, which would mean that if required to do so, they would have to come before the court if it was asked that they were cross-examined to be able to testify to what they're saying. So simply,
who would ask them to come before the court? Who would have that responsibility and right?
So it would potentially be the prosecution or indeed the judge. Now, in practice, again, this is not something that happens all the time. But what we do know, and particularly speaking to victims groups, and remember, this is where someone has been found guilty. So the person has already been found guilty of a rape or sexual assault. It can be hugely traumatic for that victim to hear, you know, it being read out in court that this person is wonderful, that this person is of high standing.
Well, that's
in the community,
that's why I wonder why, because they're so controversial, particularly in sexual assault cases. Why not get rid of them altogether?
Well, it is open to the judge to accept or to read out or to allow this type of information to obviously have an impact on the sentencing. So it's not always the case that this is read out. So again, this only applies in certain cases, and it really is a strengthening and a protection for victims so that they're not re-traumatised. If somebody is willing to put to paper...
But did you consider getting rid of them altogether? Because if somebody commits a rape and is found guilty of that, what relevance is it to that crime and the sentence that that person was a great community worker?
So it's not for me whether I have a particular view on it or not. And I suppose I probably would have a personal opinion on this. It's not for me as minister to dictate what a judge may or may not accept in this instance. So we do have to allow for that separation. But, you know, as I said, it's not the case that it happens in every instance, but where it does can be very traumatic and very difficult for the victims. So if somebody is willing to put to pen and paper that they believe this person is of, you know, a standing character or has good reputation or whatever it is, they should be willing to come before and to be cross-examined
and to answer questions.
To answer questions in person.
And when will that come into effect?
So this is part of the overall legislation. So once this bill is enacted, there's obviously a lead in time, perhaps a couple of weeks. But
and the going back to the overall package of measures, so victims in sexual offence trials, will they still be cross-examined about their sexual history?
The simple answer is yes, if that is what is decided. Again, whether my personal opinion, you know, of this matter, it's not going to be taken into account. I might have a personal view as to whether that should happen or not, but it is not for me to decide what a judge may or may not accept or what they deem as being important in the grand scheme of the overall trial. What we are saying with this new piece of legislation and changes in it is that if a person is going to be cross-examined on their previous sexual history, that they would have legal representation and that it would be the same representation that they have throughout the trial, which is currently not afforded to them, to make sure that they have support, to make sure that they have the legal knowledge and expertise to be able to understand what is happening and the type of questioning.
Will they have to apply for legal aid to have that paid for, or is it automatically paid for by the state?
This is something that would be automatically paid for. It is important that victims know throughout the process they do have support, they do have that legal representation. It is fragmented at the moment. It does not apply in all instances, as you've mentioned, where someone is being cross-examined. But again, it is important that the judge looks at all of the facts, identifies what should be accepted and what's not. You have to remember last year or the year before, we brought in preliminary trial hearings, which allows the judge, before a case even starts, to look at the types of evidence, the type of witnesses, what exactly is going to be included in the trial. And this is where something like this can be decided before a trial even takes place.
I mean, ultimately, this doesn't protect a victim, though, from the defence lawyer, the defence team. And there is a risk that they will be questioned not only about their sexual past, but also about their behaviour, what they consumed on the night, be that drugs or alcohol, their clothing, all of that. It is still very difficult. And you know, it's a consideration for people when they make that decision to pick up the phone and report a crime.
It is absolutely the case that people do not come forward because this is not straightforward. This is a very difficult environment for any person to find themselves in. However, each individual under the Constitution is entitled to provide a defence. And it is not for me to dictate what that defence may or may not be, as difficult as that might be. And as I said, whatever my own personal opinion on that might be, it is important, though, that we put the parameters in place and the resources in place to make sure that, say, for example, a judge, members of the Bar Council or the Law Society, that they are trained, that they are equipped to deal with and support victims in these vulnerable situations. It is important that we have the types of supports, be it before, during or after court, to make sure that victims have the same level of support as somebody who is perhaps being accused. It is important to put the structures and the resources in place, but we cannot dictate what a judge may or may not accept or what a person may use in defence. It is their constitutional right, and it might be very difficult, but all of these other measures are there to try and protect a person in so much as
possible. Another issue you're working on, hate speech, and there's been significant pushback, particularly from Fianna Fáil. Lisa Chambers saying there are reasonable questions around the bill. Jim O'Callaghan saying that it's deeply problematic in parts. Are you delaying that until the autumn because of that pushback?
Absolutely not. As you'll see from today and the bill we've just discussed, I have three pieces of legislation that I'm moving through the House this evening, and the Dáil rises tomorrow. So what I want to ensure is that where we have the hate crime bill, the next stage is committee stage. There will be amendments. I'm very much aware that there will be quite a number of amendments. I want to allow the time to be able to engage with colleagues. I've said very clearly that I will not rush this bill through the Seanad. And so that's what I'm doing here. Fundamentally, though, bring this back to what is this bill about? We're introducing hate crime for the first time. We do not have hate crime in this country, which says that where you attack, be it physically or otherwise, where you commit a crime already and it is motivated by your hatred of a person because of who they are, the colour of their skin, their sexual orientation, a disability they might have, that is not okay. We're also updating a law that has existed since 1989, and we're making minimal changes on hate speech. It's not new, it's not radical. We're simply saying that where you intentionally or you recklessly set out to incite hatred or violence, and that is the new part of the bill that I think is important, where you incite violence against a group of people, that we are saying as a society we won't tolerate it, and that's not okay.
But Jim O'Callaghan says that that is problematic because people might be criminalised where they weren't motivated by hate. They might have been motivated by something else, but there's enough leeway in this for them to be convicted of a hate crime.
People are not going to find themselves by accident convicted of a hate crime. So there are a number of steps to make sure that where something is not directly intended, that, you know, we're not prosecuting people for hate crime. So firstly, a crime has to be committed. So, for example, an assault has to be committed. If it is, you know, somebody has been assaulted because they're gay or somebody has been assaulted because they're a member of a particular community, the Gardaí then have to put forward evidence to show that this was motivated by hate. The DPP then have to accept that evidence and present it to a court, and then a jury of peers have to decide that this just wasn't a once-off slur, that this wasn't a pattern of behaviour, that this person didn't intend it, or that they did, and that this was clearly motivated not just by their actions but by perhaps words that they used. So there's a lot of safeguards in this legislation, but again, this is about protecting people who are most vulnerable, and unfortunately hate crimes are on the increase. The Gardaí will show us very clearly there's almost a 30% increase in hate crimes in only recent years.
Okay, Minister, thank you very much. Minister for Justice Helen McEntee. Back after this break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.